We made USAA insurance to help you save. Take advantage of discounts when you cover your home and your ride. Discover how we're helping members save at usaa.com/bundle. USAA. Restrictions apply.
This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Ping.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Dr. Madeira Show, where he will discuss testosterone optimization and full body health for the high-performance modern man. Now, here's your host, Dr. Madeira.
Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Madeira here on the Dr. Madeira Show. And today we have a special guest all the way from Australia. And his name is Lucas. And how's it going today, Lucas?
I'm well, thanks, Sam. Yeah, really, 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 really well. Thanks.
Excellent. So it's Lucas Owen, and his background is in exercise science, and he's a keen experimenter and biohacker. He is currently completing and finishing up his naturopathy degree down in Melbourne, Australia, and he goes by the name ergogenic_health on Instagram. So, and that's actually where we first met, so people can follow you there and definitely should. He has an amazing post and health information that everybody can benefit from. So hopefully people are on Instagram and can benefit from that. Today we're going to really focus on brain health, nootropics, and how to improve testosterone and mostly brain health through taking different supplements, herbal medicines, etc. So I'm really excited because last year, unfortunately, I'm excited to talk about this with you because I unfortunately sustained a concussion in a car accident. And I've been experimenting on myself with a lot of different things to get back in the game, you know, running my own clinic, doing all the marketing stuff that we all have to do when we do that. What are some of your top two or three herbal medicines or nutritional medicines that you feel like are the must-have on board nutrients or herbs to optimize brain health and performance?
Yeah, that's a good question. Well, there's a range of compounds out there that can really nourish and support the brain from different angles. But if we're looking at sort of like regenerating neurons or promoting like neuroplasticity and things like that, then some of the TCM compounds, like some of the TCM herbs, such as Romania. That one there in particular has quite a lot of research, particularly around the brain. And there's one compound found within Romania called Catalpol. And that one there has got a ton of research for inhibiting something called NOGO A, which is it's a key enzyme in the brain, similar to nerve growth factor, but it just basically helps with neuronal survival and regeneration. So I would say Romania is definitely up there as in terms of like one of the most well-researched ones, but there are some new novel ones as well. And one of which I'm really excited about, and I think a lot of people will be, and that one there is actually, I'm not sure if you've heard of it. It's called 9-methylbetacarbolene, 9-MBC.
Yeah, I've been heard of that one. Tell us more about it.
Yeah, I knew this one was going to catch you by surprise. So basically, this one here is firstly researched out of Germany. And basically, they were trying to understand its effects on reducing Parkinson's. So like preventing dopaminergic cell degeneration. And basically it's a non-harming compound, which you're familiar with, tribulus, right?
Yes. Yeah. I use tribulus in my clinic with patients.
Yeah. So tribulus does actually contain some of these harmaline compounds, which is part of the reason why it's actually slightly inhibits MAO, like the monoamine oxidase. But basically, this 9-MBC has been heavily researched in vitro, in vivo. Sadly, there are no real human studies, but there's a lot of anecdotal reports online of people using it to regenerate dopaminergic damage, or because it works on so many pathways for neurorestoration. And the most exciting bit about it for me is the fact that it can upregulate that tyrosine hydroxylase enzyme, which is obviously, for those who are listening, so like the conversion pathways from the amino acid that we eat, so like phenylalanine, that goes to tyrosine, and from tyrosine to L-DOPA, then from L-DOPA to dopamine. So what this compound has been shown to do, and it's almost semi-permanent, is that it actually upregulates that tyrosine hydroxylase enzyme. So you're getting more of the amino acid tyrosine from your diet getting shunted and converted into dopamine, which is really exciting. And the anecdotal reports online are phenomenal for that. So you got people reversing tolerance to Ritalin, Adderall. Not that I ever condone using these, because they're definitely not sustainable.
Right.
And are associated with a ton of negative side effects. But it's just exciting to see this compound, come to the forefront in 2020.
Yeah, that's going to be very helpful for people. You know, what we're seeing with all this blue light exposure, with people on their cell phones and social media kind of overdosing, and I guess, you know, quote unquote cell phone addiction. And we're all kind of attached to our devices today, for better or for worse. I mean, they're tools, so they can be used for good too. But what we're seeing is that can potentially decrease people's dopamine. And then I did another podcast with Dr. Jordan Wiggins, and what we were talking about there is, you know, just to kind of make this maybe more bite-sized or approachable for the average person out there listening, is that people are on their social media instead of like cuddling and having sex before bed, because they're getting these dopamine hits in their brain every time they get a message on their phone, every time they look at a new image on social media, every time they open Facebook app or Instagram app or et cetera. So in this case, we could use this compound, as you say, to increase their dopamine, and then they could do something maybe a little bit healthier, like meditate or reach out to a loved one and like benefit from that dopamine surge. And as some people call it, like dopamine, for the listeners, is a motivational molecule, a motivational neurotransmitter. And there's a lot of things around like not experiencing joy in life and like depressive symptoms of depression, which are actually low dopamine. For a lot of people, not low serotonin. So this is really exciting to me, because as an entrepreneur and, you know, a clinician like yourself, a practitioner, I am always looking at ways to improve dopamine. And then with my clients and my patients, it's like, how do I get that edge that I used to have 5 years ago, so that I can keep really progressing in my career and perform at work the way I need to without drinking like a whole pot of coffee, you know? That's kind of like how I see this, or, you know, just have like two cups of coffee or one cup of coffee, but still use these things, right? We don't want to demonize, coffee and caffeine, because that's also, we know there are benefits of coffee too. And, here and there, as research has shown in recent time. Are you a big fan of herbs like ginkgo and gota kola, and how do those fit into your treatment plans or ideal structuring for optimizing brain health, focus, memory, concentration, et cetera?
Yeah. So I'm a fan of ginkgo for its promoting like cerebral circulation. So it's great for improving blood flow to the brain. I wouldn't consider it as like a standalone sort of, I would never actually personally prescribe it or recommend it to someone standalone on its own, I definitely want to stack that with something else, like that's going to work on just different pathways. And just for some people, because ginkgo can act as a mild norepinephrine reuptake inhibitor. So for those listening, so like norepinephrine can be slightly anxiety inducing. And to complement that, ginkgo also inhibits glycine activity. And glycine activity is an inhibitory neurotransmitter. So you're getting that plus that's compounded with GABA-A antagonism. So you're getting, it's like blocking the GABA activity a little bit on the glycine and then having a norepinephrine effect. So some people might notice, myself included, it makes me feel a little bit too tense, like a little bit too tense. So I might complement that, like something with what you said, go-to cola, or there's another seaweed, which I really would love to talk about on this episode, because that is a true nootropic, and that has some really impressive effects, similar to L-theanine.
Oh, excellent. What is the seaweed?
So it's called Eclonia carva. It's a brown seaweed. It's been one of the most researched seaweeds in Japan. They spent over $30 million researching it across like a 10-year span. Basically, it does share similar properties to L-theanine in that it does promote alpha wave activity. It's a positive GABA-A, positive allosteric modulator of GABA-A. So it's really good for not directly binding and agonizing that GABA-A receptor like benzos or, powerful GABAergics, which lead to downregulation and withdrawal. This actually is like a gentle way to slowly promote it over time. That seaweed's one of my, probably the best discovery in 2019 personally, like from my own research and then also getting my dad to try it out before bed and him like saying he's sleeping phenomenal. And then my mum also responding well. And then it has the other side benefit of, I haven't seen the official study, but it did outperform Viagra in terms of enhancing blood flow and erectile capacity, which is another big bonus.
Yeah, that's a great bonus or side effect, beneficial effect of it. And I mean, Viagra, what I've seen clinically with Viagra is I really don't prescribe Viagra, but in the past I did, like in the earlier days, when I was working with men here and there while we were working on their hormones and whatnot, and they just wanted something, a Band-Aid to kind of get things going. And the side effects for the listener, if you haven't ever used Viagra, is you get a lot of flushing because all those medications, the PDE5 inhibitors, are vasodilating, obviously. So people will get like flushing, like almost like a niacin flush, like their whole face will turn red and they'll feel really warm and hot. So, and I even had one patient, I didn't prescribe this patient Viagra, but they came in, they said, whatever you do, don't give me a Viagra, because they were seeing blue, like their whole world around them was basically blue, different shades of blue, which doesn't really sound like the kind of time you want to have. Or that
50 shades of blue.
Yeah, 50 shades of blue. not the day or night you want to have. So with your significant other or partner or date for that matter. So it's nice that there are these natural potential alternatives to something as horrible as Viagra. So that's really exciting. And I like that you mentioned about ginkgo, it kind of giving people too much edge and not just using ginkgo alone. I mean, as you experience and I experience, we get people, friends, family, or strangers on social media asking us health questions or health advice. And oftentimes people are like, well, I took ginkgo for 6 months and, it probably wasn't a quality product, but they tried it for 3 to 6 months and it didn't do much, or and they didn't have it with like a true herbal formula, and it probably wasn't the most pharmaceutical grade, if you will. So it's good to, it's good to hear you say that people should use it with other things, which I'm definitely all about. With as far as like nootropics in general, are you seeing that people must take something like phosphatidylcholine or something that's high in choline to help their brain work optimally before we dump a bunch of other nutrients in there, like pushing different pathways and whatnot? I guess phrased another way, like, do you always recommend choline? And if not, what are some foundational things that everybody should have on board to optimize brain health before reaching for like multiple supplements or natural supplements or herbal medicine products?
Yeah, that's a really, I'm glad we're touching on the whole acetylcholine area, because for those, there are a lot of, there's actually, I think 30% of people who are already choline dominant, and they really don't need extra choline from supplementation form. So they can probably get away with having a couple of eggs a day or some other choline rich foods like liver. So what they can do is they can probably get away with it and not require supplementation, because from memory, CDP choline, one of the choline sources, has a really, really long half-life. It's like almost like 3 or 4 days. So, or 2 days, I can't remember exactly, but what that means is that it starts to build up and accumulate. And so people can easily, they might start out with CDP choline at like, let's say 150 milligrams, have a great day. That's like their first time trying it. And then the following day, they're not too bad. They'll have another dose. And then throughout the, towards the end of that day, they might notice that they start to get the symptoms of choline excess. And that can present as like slightly flat mood, excess salivation, emotional dampening. There's a few other symptoms of choline excess. Oh, sleepiness is another one. So I think it's definitely individualized here. And for people who like to experiment with choline donors, or who think that they need that as a prerequisite before they, because there's obviously that the whole choline prerequisite idea stemmed from the racetams, right? Like piracetam, oxiracetam, all those, the original, the granddaddy nootropics. So what the theory was back then is that these nootropics, the racetam families, that they chew up, or they just, they suck up a lot of choline as part of their mechanism. And that's somewhat true, but I think some people can, again, get away with not even needing it. So I guess it comes back to individuality, and it's just a bit unfortunate that we can't truly measure acetylcholine levels in someone's brain. Like, we just really don't have that sort of technology to be able to do that yet.
Yeah, it would be really nice if we had better technology around measuring these different neurotransmitters. You know, we've talked about dopamine, serotonin, acetylcholine, you know, conversion of melatonin from serotonin, and epinephrine or epinephrine dominance. But it seems like, you know, the skilled clinician can get a lot of this by taking like a good history, maybe looking at what other prescriptions have been tried and worked, you know, and but even then, it's, you know, it would be nice. I know there was a company in the US that was claiming that from like a urine test that they got great neurotransmitter results, but it came to pass that the ranges they used for these neurotransmitter labs were from about like 20 employees at the lab company. And that's how they were calibrating the results. So it was like an N of 20. It just a bunch of random people work there, and they're like, okay, here's the range for, you know, serotonin, here's the range for, you know, acetylcholine, here's the range for dopamine, etc. And that's just horrible science, as both of us know. So you know, I haven't found anything out there at this point that besides taking a great history and, I mean, maybe looking at.
We made USAA insurance for veterans like James. When he found out how much USAA was helping members save, he said,
"It's time to switch.
We'll help you find the right coverage at the right price. USAA, what you're made of, we're made for. Restrictions apply."
Something like organic acids, which are like peripheral neurotransmitter metabolites. But again, those are not the neurotransmitters that were exactly in the blood-brain barrier, because they're, we can't, maybe someday there'll be like a cerebral spinal fluid measurement. But then again, that's pretty invasive to do like a spinal cord analysis from
tap. Or nanobots or something.
Yeah, right. Yeah, maybe someone out there listening to this can start a startup company in Silicon Valley or Seattle and figure this out for all of us with the nanobots measuring our spinal fluid and our brain cerebral spinal fluid. What are some other nootropics or brain health optimizing? Like, a lot of my clients right now are working here in Seattle at tech companies and are in the startup world, and they're just looking to optimize like focus and performance and maybe prevent like things like anxiety or, they don't have panic attacks, but they're just on edge. And I really like them to reach for things that are a lot healthier than, you know, having a couple of beers or glasses of wine after work or like smoking some weed. So, while cannabis does have its place and time in medicine, I think that given the fact that the hops and beers are very estrogenic and marijuana is also estrogenic, what are some other things that you would recommend that aren't going to cause like anxiety like caffeine does, that can benefit people?
There was one herb that just crossed my mind, and that was kratom. But there's obviously the issue with legalities and like the whole possible opioid like activity, which I think would be counterintuitive for men, obviously, because the opioid aspect further burdening our already burdened testosterone. But I would say, let's sort of explore some GABA-based herbs or compounds, or like...
Yeah, let's get into some GABA-supporting compounds that you see. And, this could blend it to talking about helping people sleep at night, because there's a lot of people that just are not sleeping enough as it is. And, they're using medications to sleep, whether it be like a benzodiazepine or... Ambien, which is a horrible sleep medication. So, and those things can cause like dementia or Ambien, people just will not even remember conversations they've had completely and will be like sleepwalk or sleep drive somewhere and come back home and, wake up in the middle of the night, walk to their kitchen and eat half the things in the fridge and not even remember it. So I'm curious about helping people, get off of kind of like that train of the pharmaceutical approach and the kind of self-medication approach of using cannabis and the beer and boozing to optimize their brain health, both short-term and long-term, for focusing at work as well as sleeping. Because, drinking half a pot of coffee and then slamming 2 to 3 beers every night or shots of whiskey or something is not, as both of us know, is not a healthy lifestyle. So what would be something that they could do, like besides like L-theanine and some of the things you've already mentioned, to help just relax and also be focused during the day?
Well, one actually, which I've been experimenting with myself and also been doing a lot of research on, and this is fairly underground, so I'm happy to be bringing this to your podcast. So basically it's called homotaurine, and it's got nothing to do with the sexuality of taurine, but basically it's a modified version of taurine that's found in algae. And what that does is it actually I mean, you've probably heard of Phenibut, right? Like it's like a very strong anxiolytic nootropic, Phenibut.
I believe so, yes. Yep.
And GHB, like all those really powerful like GABAergics. So basically, anyway, so homotaurine is special because it acts as a GABA B antagonist. And what that means is that it's not exactly, so it also has GABA A agonist activity, but the real feature of it is the fact that it's a powerful GABA B antagonist. And what people have found is that they can build up their GABA B receptors over time. So basically they're upregulating because they're constantly antagonizing it. So they're bringing it back up. And what that means for some people is that they've reduced their tolerance to Phenibut and these other powerful GABAergics. So it's not exactly pleasant because basically when I dose like homotaurine, 90 minutes after dosing, it basically puts my body into a state of withdrawal, into a state of like Phenibut withdrawal. But I'm really, really fascinated by the whole snapback, the rebound physiology. Like that's a really cool space to be exploring. So it's like get bad to get good. So basically 90 to 120 minutes after dosing, I'll experience really bad nausea, like really weird stomach movements, like really extreme tension, on edge sort of feeling. But then that's replaced with this, like the following day, like it takes like 24 hours at least to fully exit the brain. But basically it leaves me feeling in a state of like heightened bliss. Like it feels like I've never used Phenibut, but basically I'm basically in reverse of Phenibut. So I'm like, I'm getting the effects of what people want, but I'm doing it in reverse sort of thing. So, yeah, I think that's got a lot of potential. And I think if someone uses it long enough and if they constantly do it, like let's say for a week or so, then they can really start to experience the benefits of what GABA B, heightened GABA B activity would feel like, because that plays a crucial role in pleasure, reward, mood. Heaps of research on it for schizophrenia, heaps of research on it for memory consolidation, long-term potentiation, things like that. So homotaurines, again, that's like, it was pretty hard to source. I had to get it from Luxembourg all the way from,
oh, wow.
Yeah, so it was a bit, it was very expensive. But I think it's got a lot of potential. And if people can just endure the four to six hours of feeling bad to just know that you're going to feel great, then it's worth it sort of thing.
Gotcha. So is this a capsulated thing or you take it in a powder or how is it taken?
Yeah, it's in capsule form. So oral. A lot of the research that they conducted on homotaurine was for Alzheimer's because it does improve hippocampal neuronal survival and things like that. It's really good for that, for the memory. It failed as a drug for Alzheimer's. I can't remember exactly why. It wasn't effective enough or something. I reckon there would have been some hidden agenda there, the reason why it failed.
Right. So it can actually help protect the hippocampus from like hippocampal atrophy or destruction from other things, or like how do we know how it's working on the hippocampus or what it's doing for the hippocampus exactly?
I don't know if it's actually protecting the hippocampus from like some sort of toxin exposure, but I think it primarily just helps to like just regenerate or repair, or probably acting as like an antioxidant in that brain region, which is a way that a lot of these nootropics work, is that they're just sort of they're acting as like an antioxidant, or they're upregulating antioxidant pathways to protect the brain. But then it's also working on BDNF as well, which is pretty cool. Like I found that a lot of compounds do work on BDNF. But yeah, no, it's pretty, I think it's got its use, I think. So,
yeah. How would people, feel after like the 24 hours are up and they've gone through that, you know, the nausea for the 4 hours the day before, what would they be looking to feel? Would they just feel like super joyful and relaxed, or what kind of sensations, or what did you notice when you used it?
The most obvious one for me was music sounding a lot better, like musical appreciation, just feeling like music's like sort of hugging you sort of feeling. So honestly, it felt like I was getting like a brain massage, to be honest. Like I felt like somebody was like hugging me internally. It was a nice feeling. Obviously, like a lot of people would love to experience that. But then also I felt like my emotional depth was improved. Like instead of hovering, because I'm an entrepreneur, I'm always in hustle mode, always on autopilot. Like my emotions can sometimes become a little bit numbed. Like, and so I felt like, and I'm sure many people can relate to that, just being in that work mode and just unable to experience the full depth of the human existence. But basically I felt like home Rotorian definitely brought back the emotional depth, like just being able to like feel things properly, you know, which is
sounds
pretty cool.
Sounds lovely. I mean, sounds great. Like, and this was basically a medication that was in some trials and then it was kind of thrown out of the, basically the equation or the options for Alzheimer's. And now people can buy it through a company in Luxembourg. So for example, if I wanted to try it, I could just like go online, contact that company. Is that how it works? Or
yeah, it's publicly available. The company is called Supersmart. I think it's supersmart.com. But basically, yeah, like I said, it's not exactly, I wouldn't consider it like a pharmaceutical drug, because it is there. They did, isolate it from brown algae, which is, and it wouldn't surprise me, man, if actually the Eclonia carva, which I mentioned earlier, has small amounts of home Rotorian present, because I mean it is a brown algae, and there's probably other types of taurine in there. I'm going to make a silly joke here. No home Rotorian.
Nice. Well, that sounds great. I mean, I personally want to try both of those and see how they go. And I like the concept or the option where you can take something that's like extracted from an algae to optimize brain health without having this kind of like overstimulation. Cause what I see, and Seattle is like a smaller San Francisco, Silicon Valley community. We're only about 200,000 people smaller than San Francisco itself up here. And a lot of people are actually coming up from that part of the country to Seattle for jobs and whatnot. So we have people up here and some of them are my patients and they're telling me like, hey, you know, I kind of got addicted to nicotine because I started chewing nicotine gum to stay on the ball at work. I'm working doing X, Y, and Z at this tech company and I got to keep up with it. And as people age and they get through tech, they are noticing like, hey, I could be replaced by like one person or two people half my age. And there's this kind of like ageism in tech right now. There's some sexism too. So it's still like a male dominated, community, but there's also this ageism that my patients who like once they hit like 40 and up, they're basically feel like they're not fighting for the job, but the lack of job security is felt. And it's different company to company, but this is what people have been reporting to me for years. And so my point being, instead of like them, you know, chewing on some nicotine gum, drinking three cups or more of coffee a day, or like a triple shot three times a day of Starbucks coffee, they can, you know, get off of that stuff, because the issue with nicotine, you know, I think it has a place, but it is addictive. For men that are concerned about sexual health, it's vasoconstricting. So that means that you're, if you already have atherosclerosis and plaque building up in your heart and your penis capillary bed, then you're going to have issues already on top from poor diet, lifestyle, and genetics. And then on top of that, you throw in some nicotine. It's like, well, you're not getting an erection, you know? So to have something that also helps the brain, but is calming and can also like bring up these feelings of like a brain hug, as you say, that sounds fantastic. I mean, down in LA, I know people are like snorting coke and doing Molly like it's a vitamin. So to have something that's basically a natural extract from an algae sounds amazing. I mean, I think most people listening to this are going to think like algae, that sounds unbelievable that we could get something for our brain from algae. I mean, we know that you can get like some omega fatty acids from algae now, but I think most people aren't aware of this stuff. So I'm really excited about it. You know, I think there's a huge, huge push for people to optimize brain health. You know, there's people that have been talking about things like modafinil and stuff like that, and not liking the effects of these quote unquote brain drugs. So to have natural options is fantastic, beyond what most people have probably heard of. What about, sorry, go ahead.
I was just going to mention, you brought up modafinil, and a lot of people have messaged me personally asking for like a natural modafinil alternative. And we can jump into BrainX, my formula, towards the end, but we'll sort of, there is another way we can, because modafinil works through histamine and orexin. So like it's jacking up histamine, and histamine is way more wakefulness inducing than coffee, than dopamine. Like that whole histamine system is really important for that wakefulness. So, I've had people message me, okay, are there any sort of natural ways we can somewhat replicate modafinil? And there is one herb known as Kutajar, K-U-T-A-J-A, Kutajar. And there's an alkaloid found in Kutajar, which is called conazine. And conazine is a H3, so histamine. So there's four histamine receptors. And conazine acts as a histamine H3 antagonist. So what that means is that it's disinhibiting histamine release, which means that it promotes histamine. So, and conazine has some other really interesting effects as well, like highly neuroprotective. It's a shame though, because the herb itself, Kutajar, is powerfully, like in Ayurveda, they use it primarily, I think, as like a diuretic, and it's very, very powerful at acting as a diuretic. But yeah, I think if somebody were to stack Kutajar, like conazine, or if somebody was to actually isolate the conazine from Kutajar and then combine it with, let's say, L-histidine, which is the amino acid, an essential amino acid, mind you, with then some other cofactors like B6 and just B6 and possibly B12, then they can pretty much experience what high histamine can feel like. And I know there's a lot of people out there that are histamine intolerant, but for those who are not, then they can get a sneak peek at what like a high histamine state could feel like, and sort of experience the wakefulness that you can get from histamine. And then also, because it plays a role in like arousal as well, so in that regard it could be good for guys who have not premature ejaculation but delayed ejaculation, because guys who have that, obviously a lot of them have too much serotonin, number one, so like, or they have not enough histamine as well. So, I mean, there's a ton of other pathways, but the lack of histamine can play a role in delayed ejaculation as well.
Fascinating. Yeah, histamine is, it definitely seems like the double-edged sword. I like that you said that there's some people who are histamine intolerant, because, you know, that's definitely what we see with people with the histamine intolerance with like bloating and stuff like that with high histamine foods and stuff. So, I mean, it would be fascinating if like a compounding pharmacist could get a hold of this and like make like a transdermal cream or something, so it doesn't have to go through the gut. And so many people are already having gut problems, and then throw like histamine in their gut, they're just going to be miserable, you know? But if you can get it like a transdermal cream, like in the back of the neck or something, to get straight up into the brain, that would be really interesting. I know people, I personally haven't experimented with modafinil. I know people have, and it doesn't sound like something that I would want personally. It sounds more like a norepinephrine overdrive, like an adrenaline overdrive. And personally, you know, I like to feel not like the cat that stuck its claw in the electrical socket when I'm trying to get my work done, you know, like kind of like this calm, focused energy would be, you know, fantastic. So, you know, like a feeling of like L-theanine with like some ginkgo and, you know, maybe other, something like gotocola and other herbs like that on top of maybe some skullcap or something to like be calming but focused. Because I think a lot of people's poor decisions in life come from either they're in like adrenaline overdrive because that's just where they stay all the time and that's where they live that's what they're used to. And they make these fear-based decisions that, especially if you're running a business or you're running a big department of a company and you're having to make these like quick decisions that could like end your career or not. I personally don't think you want to be like all cracked out, so to speak. So, I mean, maybe you can use modafinil to get through a period in your life where you just need to live there for a while. But most of my patients, I'm trying to get them out of fight or flight as their like dominant approach to life, where they're just like in that overdrive mode all the time. And I think there's plenty of things like rush hour traffic in any metropolitan area that someone lives in, you know, family dynamics, stress in career, work, financial stress. Like most people already have all those things going on. So to come down a little bit and like just get in that neutral zone where you're like, okay, now if I need to, I can floor it into overdrive and get this thing done in like half an hour if I have to. But to constantly be like pushed over the edge, it's kind of like, I don't know if people know about, like people listening know about like methylated folate, but if you've ever overdosed on like a methylated folate capsule, it's like this feeling like you drank a, you know, 8 cups of triple shot coffee and you didn't know it, you know? So that's not a good feeling. So in the world of like nootropics, and it's just knowing your constitution and hopefully you're working with a practitioner, like someone like us, and like knowing like, hey man, like I actually am an anxious person and I've had panic attacks in my past. Like I don't want to go up. I want to kind of like chill, you know, but be focused. Like I don't want to be asleep at my desk, but I want to be focused. Where some people, they may be like already super kind of sedated in their personality and they're just kind of like low and slow already. And then maybe something like this histamine dominating approach with something other than modafinil or modafinil would be optimal for them. So I think it's like kind of like what we went back to about testing. If we could test what's going on in the brain better than we can now, in an ideal world, then we would be able to have like these profiles. And, you know, the best I've found is an organic acid test, as well as like a good history. So I think where things get lost in the biohacking community is everybody's treating themselves like the next person, you know, it's not individualized enough, in that approach, where like Ayurvedic medicine is pretty individualized. Chinese medicine, naturopathic medicine, these are all individualized approaches. So the person listening to this who's like, well, I'm biohacking off the internet, you know, it's like, you got to know your own chemistry. you got to know like the best you can. If you're adopted, you might not know this, but the best you can, like how your parents' biochemistry was, maybe even get some genetic testing and laid on top of that. And then you can like really optimize brain health and overall health. I think that's the future of medicine that we have partial access to now. So it's, I mean, that's why I'm pumped about these algaes, you know? After that rant, I'm curious about sleep. So sleep seems to be like everybody's not sleeping enough. Everybody's getting, in North America, at least less than 7 hours of sleep, typically six, sometimes five. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we know that that can cause like dementia, inflammation in the body, gut health dysregulation, eventually true longstanding dementia and Alzheimer's, or at least potentiate that if someone has genetic predisposition. So if you have like APOE genotype or something like that. And everybody has like some gut problem today. It seems like SIBO or fungal infections in the gut are like ubiquitous across the board. So no one's getting enough sleep. What are some supplements or herbs that you're finding again and again that you keep going back to, like, hey, this is like the best one that I'm finding for sleep for friends, family, or yourself, or clients that you're working with?
Yeah, definitely. That Eclonia Carver that I mentioned earlier, that's still right now, like nothing's really beating it in terms of its consistency. And also just the way it makes me feel when I wake up, like, and how my father feels when he wakes up, like it just either like you sort of wake up and there's no way you could fall back asleep because you just feel so rested. And that's a good quality sleep in my opinion, even though my Oura Ring doesn't really show that my deep sleep's massively improved or my REM sleep's altered in some way. I just wake up feeling really well rested and ready to start. And I always feel really clear when I wake up, which is really cool. So that's sort of a matter of like subjective versus objective quantification, you know, like in that case, my subjective impression is too strong to just go based off my objective Oura Ring. And so in that case, yeah, Eclonia Carver is definitely one of my favorites. But then obviously you've got the other sort of adaptogenic nervines, things like passion flower, which I know you've mentioned previously. Lemon balm's pretty good. Lemon balm would stack really well with Eclonia Carver. I've always wondered though with lemon balm, because it's part of the mint family, right? It's similar to the...
It is, yeah, it's in the mint family.
I've always wondered if it has suppressive effects on male hormonal status. Haven't really seen any research. Have you come across anything in that regard? Or
I haven't yet, not with lemon balm. I haven't seen anything like that. I do believe it's lemon balm that can be contraindicated in some thyroid conditions. So
yeah,
but that's the only thing really. But a lot of people have thyroid problems today, so they should be aware of that, like overdosing on lemon balm. Also has some antiviral benefits. So like if someone has like reactivated mono, could be really calming to the nervous system. Also tastes good. It does taste lemon minty. So you can just, I just eat the leaves sometimes, but yeah, I haven't seen it have any issues with male hormones specifically yet.
Yeah. And then obviously like chamomile is pretty good. And also a compound isolated from skullcap. It's called Bicilline. Have you seen that Bicilline actual, you can get that from Lift Mode. That's actually like, a pretty cool compound that works on obviously mostly through GABA, but then it inhibits something called POP or something, prolyl oligopeptidase or something, which I don't know how that plays a role in like recycling hormones or something like that. But yeah, that's pretty good for, you know, promoting sleep onset. And then the other one is Blue Lotus. Nice. That's also known as Nelumbo Nucifera. That's pretty cool to play around with. Has some It has some anti-dopaminergic properties, so someone needs to be pretty careful not dosing that too high, because then they can wake up feeling a little bit flat or like, you know, yeah, that's pretty much from the sleep herbs. That's like, they're probably like my go-to. And then you've obviously got glycine, taurine, some other nutraceuticals, things like that. Yeah, they're probably my go-to, man.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. I like the idea of like the isolate from the skull cap. And I mean, I make my own skull cap tinctures from the leaf, the aerial parts. And my mom has an organic herb farm in Montana, so we just harvest that, dry it, and then make skull cap tinctures. But having an isolate could be really good for that person that's like, hey, I want to get off of a medication, you know, use the isolate at night and then the whole herb liquid extract during the day, where it's not as sedating in the liquid extract. It's kind of like, I find that it's dose dependent. Like, so if you drink like 2 shots of skullcap liquid extract, you're going to be, you know, pretty sleepy. But if you just take like 1 milliliter 3 times a day during your work day, can really just take the edge off. If you're starting to get more anxious, or they're in overdrive, you know, like maybe the company's about to go public or something on the stock market, or, you know, they're just starting their company and they're hitting lots of road, you know, bumps and speed bumps in the way. So skullcap is like one of my favorite herbs for that. And what I find is that a lot of men are using these IPA high hops beers to just chill out. And it's like,
so silly.
They want the hops, you know, they want the sedative effect of the hops, but hops are high in, you know, promoting estrogen. It's one of the strongest phytoestrogens out there. And hops is super bitter too. So skullcap tastes a lot better. If you want, you know, if someone wants like a hops beer, I would just suggest like getting, you know, ideally not a man, but if you have low estrogen, sure. Getting like a bubbly water, you can just make your own soda water at home. That's clean water, and then getting an organic hops liquid extract, alcohol liquid extract, like a tincture or liquid extract, 1-to-1 or less, ideally, like a 1-to-5 would be a tincture ratio, marked to menstruum, and then just putting like a dropper or two in that bubbly water, and it'll taste exactly like a beer, you know? And then you're getting the hops, and you can chill out. Some of the old school herbalists, and this may not sound that effective, but some of the old school herbalists like Dr. Christopher used to just have people make like a lavender hops pillow. So you can just put that like next to you and people just crash out just by like inhaling the lavender and the hops. So that's a kind of similar idea to like essential oils. But what I typically do is like right after work, get home, or right before bed, is like just fill a shot glass half with water and half with like the skullcap liquid extract, and then just drink that down. And then I'm not like reaching for like melatonin, which can turn off your own melatonin production. And I've talked to some people recently that were like, oh, I was taking melatonin every night. They're not traveling between time zones, which is a great time to use melatonin, by the way, but they basically shut off their own production of melatonin, and they developed this insomnia from it. And then these prescription medications that people are using, like different sleep medications, like tricyclic antidepressants and whatnot, are causing men to have like low libido, sexual dysfunction, kind of like this relapse insomnia after they stop them. And these medications can stay in the body, you know, 6 to 12 months, or affect the body 6 to 12 months after people stop taking them. And they're ubiquitous. Like, are they being prescribed a lot in Australia too? Like there in the US?
Oh, big time, big time. Yeah. You mean the antidepressants and like benzos, things like that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. It's equally as bad here. And the that whole subject, which you sort of brought up, like the fact that they can linger. And the whole PSSD, that's for people who are unfamiliar, that's like post-SSRI sexual dysfunction. Mm-hmm. And there are millions of guys out there like looking for help And like, you know, they may have like, so what's actually happened for a lot of them is that they've like, the doctors suggested, okay, let's try putting you on Lexapro or some SSRI just for a few days, see how you respond. And then they're getting these, so they used it, then they're just not the same. They're not the same for months, for years later. Some of them are still battling symptoms. And we're talking like epigenetic changes to like some of the serotonin receptors, in particular the 5-HT1A, the serotonin 1A receptor, which is becoming desensitized. And that doesn't only affect sexual health. It also affects like emotional depth, which I alluded to before. And also it links into anhedonia, which is like the inability to experience pleasure. So people that are, I just think, I wish people were more educated, and I wish, like one of my big goals, like moving into the reason why, one of the reasons why I love studying what I am is because like, I really would love to start educating guys more and more on this topic, because it would sort of, it upsets me to see that, you know, like it's a big deal. It's a really big deal.
I agree.
Yeah. So, and in terms of like treatment for it, it's really tricky. Like it's really, really tough to sort of like reverse that PTSD sort of state. There's a few success stories online of people like trialing out different medications. Some people have reversed it using ginkgo because that ginkgo does work on that 1A receptor. Some people have had some benefits from using maca as well. Yohimbine is pretty powerful. It can be very anxiety inducing though. I'm sure have you experimented with it before?
I have. Yeah. I feel like, there's definitely people who need it. And I think that's how that herb fits into like the constitutional approach. Like if someone is trying to optimize sexual health with yohimbine and they're already kind of like in the Ayurvedic doshas of like high vata or a lot of vata energy, then, which for the listeners basically means it's basically like air, ether, element combined with those are the people that are really smart and like fast and quick and usually more of like a thin build. Yohimbine is just not the herb for that person because it's going to make them more anxious, and if they don't have premature ejaculation, for them it could cause potentially push them that way, if that makes sense. So
yeah.
Yeah, so that's cool to see that is helping people kind of get out of this slump from these medications. And, you know, I've had people report to me like, hey, I'm taking my friend's Lexapro because I'm suicidal because I hate my life and my job. And it's like, geez, you know, like, let's have you quit your job. You know, like, you don't have a Lexapro deficiency. You have like a lack of love for your life right now, you know?
Passion deficiency.
Yeah, passion deficiency, like someone's stealing your passion away. So this topic reminds me a lot about what this one doctor, Dr. Peter C. Gauche, he's an MD and used to work in the pharmaceutical industry, wrote a great book. He also helped start the Cochrane collaboration, the Cochrane Review Database, both the Nordic Cochrane Review Database, which he's the head of, and the Cochrane Review Database, which if people don't know what that is, it's like the most prestigious database of medical research in the world. And they're very stringent on their reviews of research. But he wrote a book and it's called Deadly Medicine and Organized Crime. And basically how the pharmaceutical industry is acting like big tobacco in the world, and which is a great analogy. Like big tobacco used all these things to kind of lie about how bad cigarettes were for us all. And in his chapter, people can buy this book on Amazon. I have no connection with it. He talks about these different pharmaceutical agents used in psychiatry and how basically there's no research to back them up. Like the research is complete garbage. And this is a medical doctor. This is a man who used to work in big pharma and the pharmaceutical industry. And I mean, he's very, very critical of all research. So you can go and check out his research reviews and his research on the Cochrane Review database and other places in the British Medical Journal and et cetera. So long story short, like, we don't have the research for these psychiatric medications. So for a lot of them anyway, and what we're seeing, as you're saying, like, these side effects are severe and some people never really get quite out of this slump completely. And I like that you said that it is hard to treat, because hopefully that scares people away from just jumping on one of these medications like it's no big deal. I mean, if you can't sleep, there's a lot of other things you can do before you take something that's going to mess up your brain for a year or more. So that, to me, it's scary. It's scary how much benzodiazepines are being overprescribed. And I'm not trying to, like, tell people that if you're suicidal, you probably, you know, you may need one of these medications for a time, but maybe try to get one that's not going to have a side effect to, like, mess up the rest of your sex life too. And, you know, same thing with the benzodiazepines. Like, if you need five Xanax or Valium to, like, get through the month, use them sparingly. They're very, very addictive. There's research showing, recent research too, showing that they can cause dementia. So my concern there is, like, we're going to have millions and millions of people who have dementia, and we already have this as a problem, and they're not, you know, we're living longer, but they're not going to be able to remember their life. They're not going to, their family members are going to be devastated emotionally. And I can speak to this because my grandfather had dementia later in his life, and his sister, my great aunt, had Alzheimer's. So, I mean, I've seen how that impacted me personally and emotionally, and I've seen how it impacted my family. So if someone's listening and it's like, oh, well, you know, we're all just taking these medications, no big deal, maybe look at the list of side effects, go on, like, drugs.com or rxlist.com or something, and check it out and have this conversation. This is part of informed consent, but unfortunately, medical doctors just don't take the time or don't have the time to go over these side effects with their patients, which is what all doctors, myself included, should be doing with everything we prescribe. Like, hey, this is the standard of care. This is what I'm doing. But these are the potential side effects. These are the side effects that I typically see with my patients. These are the very rare side effects, but you should be aware of this. Now sign the form. But that usually doesn't happen. So, you know, pick up the book by Dr. Gaucher, and his first name's Peter. It's on Amazon. And maybe try some of these natural things first. And in naturopathic medicine, we talk about the therapeutic order. So therapeutic order is you try the least harmful things first, lifestyle, drinking more water, going to bed earlier, exercising. Then you add in, like, the nutrients and the herbs on top of that. Then you add in medications. But in the Western culture, because of the way medicine historically developed, is we, you know, idolize this kind of chemistry approach, biochemical approach, and the science behind it. So we're reaching for medications first. And, you know, no one's eating well, no one's sleeping enough. I mean, not no one, but most people that we talk to that are feeling unhealthy are not doing the basics. So you got to do the basics, and then you can add in the other things on top of that. And sometimes you need prescriptions so you can just function, and then eventually you can stop taking them. Same thing with herbs and nutrients. Like, you can use a nootropic for 3 months, and then it's like, oh, well, you know, I don't have the same issues with focus anymore. I don't need to take this anymore. And that's the ideal, right? That people can just kind of, like, take this for a period of time. The idea isn't that you're taking something the rest of your life. Whereas, I mean, you may need to take B12 the rest of your life, but, you know, like, certain prescription medications and these brain pushing things, especially something like modafinil or these histamine nootropics we were talking about. Anything else that you want to mention? We're going to talk about your brain supplement in a second here. But before we get into that, is there anything else that you want to mention that you feel like may fill in some gaps that we may have missed?
No, man, I think you covered some really, like, really important points, particularly around, like, making sure people do the basics, like, and just realizing that it's like the 80-20 rule, right? Like, do get those foundations right, then you can stack on and then add on these, like, these little bonuses, things like nootropics, which can really, like, you take you to that next level. But really, nothing is ever going to be a good night's sleep, like high quality sleep, you know, a well balanced diet, whatever that is in nowadays. And then, like, in my opinion, a well balanced diet is one that satisfies one's energy requirements, two, corrects all nutrient deficiencies. So I don't want to see anyone deficient in any nutrient, fat soluble, water soluble, I don't care what it is. Limiting toxicity, like, so that's what really is the core of what I think is, like, what makes a good diet is something that limits toxicity, replenishes deficiencies, satisfies one's energy requirements, and minimizes oxidative stress and reduces inflammation. Like, I think that should be paramount for a good diet. But we could set up another whole podcast talking about diet. But so then sleep, diet, stress management, and then movement. I think they're the foundations. And then obviously you can stack on things like nootropics on the top, which is what I've been working on for years. And this formula, which I'm proud to announce here, called BrainX, is something that I'm really, really pumped to get it to market. And we've had some really, really good feedback from just, like, the beta testers so far. So basically, I'll break it down. So basically, it's a nootropic sachet, which people can add into their coffee or any other beverage. It doesn't have to be coffee, but it's ideal with coffee because it enhances the energizing effects that one gets from it. It reduces tolerance. It reduces the tolerance to caffeine itself, because one of the nootropics in there can actually upregulate dopamine receptor density, which is really important, I think, nowadays. Then two of the other ingredients, both are from Brazil. They're two adaptogenic herbs, which you're probably familiar with, Mirapuama, is obviously, yeah. That's it is used as an aphrodisiac, but it does have some pretty impressive effects in the brain, such as, like, increasing nerve growth factor, similar to lion's mane. And then the other herb is catawaba, and that one there, I think, well, that really is the chief herb in my formula. And that one there is a mild dopamine reuptake inhibitor. But the most amazing part about it is that a lot of people who've used it actually report reverse tolerance to it. So, like, it actually gets more effective, over time. They need less and less of it. And then I've finished off the formula with a bulk filler, which is not really a filler. It's like a therapeutic filler, D-ribose, which is a naturally occurring sugar in the body, which works similar to creatine. It just helps to resynthesize ATP in the body. And it's also found really low and highly useful in, chronic fatigue patients as well. So that's the entire formula. So that's something I'm super excited to get to market, and hopefully have it available in the US as well. But primarily, dominating the Aussie market is my goal.
Excellent. Yeah, I'm excited to try it. I've used D-ribose when I was in med school mostly. And just to, like, keep up with the work demands, the energy demands of, you know, studying 7 days a week and trying to keep up an exercise routine and, you know, being low on the sleep quota in that really pressure cooker community scenario, which I think people are living in all the time. And, you know, D-ribose is awesome. So I know, and it's in some, like, pre-workout formulas, and would this be something that I could use, or the listener could also use, not just for brain health, but like throw it in a smoothie or throw it in some water and just drink it on your way to the gym in the morning, or in your cup of coffee on your way to the gym in the morning?
Yeah, 100%. Like, it can be, because of the flavor, like the flavor profile of the actual sachet itself. I mean, the total serving size is only 2 grams, but the actual flavor profile is slightly sweet and barely noticeable, really. Like, if somebody mixes it in their coffee, they won't even notice it even being there, because I know how picky and how fussy some people get when it comes to the flavor of their coffee. But yeah, people can use it for physical energy, particularly good for those under a lot of stress because of the adaptogenic profile of both Catawba and Miropama. And then really good for like verbal fluency as well, because the uridine, like I said before, it actually does increase phospholipid synthesis and improves like phosphatidylcholine production, and then also regenerates and repairs dopamine receptors. So that in itself is sensitizing someone to the caffeine, but then also to the Catawba in there as well. So it's like there's so much synergy going on in the whole formula from so many different angles. And I know it's a winner just based on the feedback from the people that have used it. They really like it. And even the good part about it is that a lot of people will feel it the first time they use it. It's not going to be, it's nowhere near modafinil or anything like that, but it's enough to get you that good little kick. And again, it builds over time. So it's definitely a very versatile stack. And yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing what people say about it, because it's just going to be what I believe is going to be like almost life changing for some people. And a lot better than Bulletproof coffee.
Yes, definitely. Yeah, I tried the Bulletproof route, and that didn't work for my genetics. My LDL went up a little too high, and I have family history on my dad's side of coronary artery disease, so that was a no-go for me. And I've seen that happen for a lot of my patients over the years too, with the Bulletproof just not being conducive to a healthy, healthy life and healthy heart health. Mm. But this is awesome. I'm on your pre-order list now and just filled out the form online. So people listening should go there and do the same. It's brainx.me, and you can check out all the ingredients and read about them there. And then you can sign up and be on the pre-order list. So when it does come to the United States or wherever you live in Australia, is it already available in Australia, or is it still?
Not yet.
Not yet.
Still just on pre-order. Yeah. Yep.
Okay. And do you have a potential release date that you're willing to share with us for Australia?
I'd be hoping it'd be in the next at least 3 months okay. from now. I'm keeping it conservative just to
right.
to play it safe.
So sometime in mid to late April for Australia. In the US, do you have an idea, or do we not know yet?
I can't really give a time frame on that.
Yeah.
Sorry, man.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll keep people posted. Mm. I'm excited to try that, because that just seems so user-friendly. You can just, like you said, throw it in your coffee and mix it in, and you're ready to go. Can people use that after like 5 p.m. or is it just in the morning use?
Yeah. I would suggest that people have it earlier in the day, because it is slightly stimulating, and it does reduce GABA activity, because the Miropama is similar to ginkgo in that regard, because it actually, part of the reason why it improves wakefulness and alertness is because it blocks GABA A activity. So I guess people could offset that with GABAergic compounds, but again, I recommend people use it earlier in the day and no more than 2 sachets a day. Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah. Easy to do. And I like that it's not a capsule, because it seems like a lot of people are already taking a lot of supplements, and it's a powder. So you can just put it in your drink and you're ready to go, put it in your coffee or water, so that, or whatever else someone's drinking. Where can people find you? What is the best way to find you? We should mention your Instagram again, but your website and whatnot, if they want to get in touch with you.
Yeah. So my website's just ergogenichealth.com.au. I share blogs there. I've got a lot of products listed on my site as well. They're all affiliate based products, ones that I've used and researched and think deserve a lot more attention. And then my Instagram, as you mentioned before, is ergogenic_health. I'm posting a lot of content there. I'm always doing my quizzes on my stories as well, with some funny multiple choice answers just to lighten the mood a bit. and then just brainx.me, which is the product which I'm working towards. So that's pretty much where people can find me. And I'm also admin of a Facebook group, Nootropics and Biohacking Australia. So people can join that group, and also just started pumping out some content on YouTube. And in particular, that first compound that I mentioned in today's episode, that 9-methylbetacarbolein, 9-MBC, the dopamine repairer. I just did a video on that. So people can just search on YouTube, 9-MBC, and they'll be able to see that first video.
Awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's pretty much it, man.
That's great. I mean, that's a lot. So I'm going to check out that YouTube video, and I think everyone else should as well. So I want to thank you for your time. I know you're a busy guy, and I'm excited to have everybody listen to this podcast and keep following you thereafter. So thanks so much for being on the show, and we'll definitely be in touch. Everybody, share this podcast with friends and family, keeping it ad-free so you don't have to deal with all that stuff. Have a good one. Until next time. Bye. Now, here's for my mandatory disclaimer. This is a medical information podcast and is only for general information purposes. It does not substitute or constitute the practice of medicine or any medical practices, including the giving of medical advice to any individual. And please observe that no doctor-patient relationship has been formed here. This medical podcast offers health, hormone, fitness, and nutrition information and is designed for educational purposes only. You should not rely on this information as a substitution for, nor does it replace professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. If you have any concerns or questions about your health, you should always consult with a physician or other healthcare professional. Do not disregard, avoid, or delay obtaining medical or health-related advice and appropriate treatment from your healthcare professional. Users should seek the care of their physician or healthcare professional for any such conditions. The use of any information provided on this podcast is solely at your own risk. The contents and topics of this podcast have not been evaluated by the FDA nor approved by any other government or official body. The topics and content covered is not intended to diagnose, cure, or prevent any disease or disorder of any kind. Developments in medical research may impact the health, fitness, and nutritional advice that appears here on the podcast in the future episodes. No assurance can be given that the advice contained in this podcast will always include the most recent findings or developments in medicine with respect to the particular material covered. If you are in the United States and think you are having a medical or health emergency, call your healthcare professional or 911 immediately. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to hearing your feedback and looking forward to have you on future podcasts. Thank you.